All right. Well, over this past weekend, there was a satanic mass in Canada, a blasphemous and sacrilegious rite. So we're going to talk today about what is a satanic mass or a black mass, what's the history behind it, how far back does it go, and also compare it to a similar rite, which is the Gnostic mass, which goes back to Aleister Crowley. It's a little bit different, same purpose. Here today with Tim Gordon. How are you, Tim?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. It's we're getting back into it. You're a teacher, school, new grind.
Early.
I got eight
Yeah.
kids are going to school, new grind.
That's right. New school year. Yeah, it's rough at the
It
beginning.
is, man.
The fall semester is always a much better semester than spring because you got the holidays, you got football games on Friday nights, you have the weather's easing up rather than coming on here in the desert, but the first week, it's
Killer.
tough to get up after that summer.
Killer.
So,
All right, let's pray and we'll jump into this talk about the theology history of satanic masses. We'll do the Our Father. Nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, Amen. Pater noster, quies in caelis, sanctificetur nomen tuum, advenient regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra. Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen. Angel of God, our guardian dear, to whom God's love commits us here, ever this day be at our side, to light, to
Delight to
guide,
go,
to rule, to
guard to
guide.
rule, guide.
Amen. Nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Okay, so man, Ottawa, Satanic Mass, August 7th. I'm gonna put their little ad up here on the screen. It's pretty interesting. They say they had a satanic unbaptism. A lot of people don't know what that is. We'll talk about that. A black mass ritual, and then a sock drive for the homeless shelter.
Well, that's nice. They've got
How
to be mocking
charitable of
this.
them.
Yeah, socks. I mean, it sounds like they're mocking Christian charity. That
It does.
that's kind of funny, if so. But I mean, maybe I don't think so. Maybe they're doing just satanic charity at its best. Is the best article of clothing you can come up with to give is the sock. The most worthless and vile, reviled
When
of
it's
all
Christmas,
pieces of clothing.
the absolute worst gift that you get every year is the socks.
Yeah,
You know?
certainly. Not unuseful, just.
Yeah, like when the kids say, "What'd you get for me? What'd you give my birthday, Dad? What, for Christmas again?" I'm like, socks.
You're in luck.
Yeah, socks. I know you haven't been wearing socks lately, so I bought you a bunch of socks.
Actually got them for free from the Coven down the
I
street.
went. Yeah,
Coven with a K.
the
What,
Satanists
who are these
downtown are
guys?
handing out socks.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Daddy.
So then they also had a burlesque performance, which is basically, I think it's like a strip show, right? That's what burlesque means. Right,
Believe so.
some erotic dancing, and then they had vendors, art, music, rituals, .. and more.
It's a veritable Renaissance fair
Yeah,
over
basically,
there
yeah.
with the Coven. Why do you think they spell the name with a K? What's up with that? Just they're getting sick of the typical, you're talking to your friends in the local chapter, the local Coven, and you just want to be unique or what?
I don't
I
know.
couldn't figure out the K. They spell with a K. It's a C word.
Yeah, well, it's related to the Latin where we get convent, right? It just
Is
means,
it?
yeah,
Is
from
it?
ventus. We do our Latin word of the early up front. Yeah, I'm pretty sure con and ventus coming
Yeah,
together.
like the opposite.
Yeah, so it's
Because
just,
you wouldn't say a coven of nuns. It's
no,
like the
you
opposite
wouldn't.
of that.
You wouldn't say that, but they wouldn't use the word coven. I'm pretty sure that's, I mean, I just guessed it came from conventus. Maybe it doesn't. Let me look it up.
Who's to say? Yeah, we don't have the technology.
Sometimes it just seems so obvious, but
That
maybe
was a
it's,
Michael Scottism, by the way. Yeah,
yeah.
no, I don't know. You're probably right.
Or maybe it
Coven.
comes from covenant.
Yeah.
You know? A coven.
a covenant for socks. You sell your soul to the devil for free socks.
That's right.
Seems like a bad deal to me. I don't know.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I'm not good at bargaining.
I'm glad that I guessed properly. That's how it happens here on TNT. But a coven is a variant of a covent or convent from Latin, conventus. So
nice.
For an assembly of witches, it goes back to 1660s. That makes sense. Witches are the opposite of nuns.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Women consecrated and dedicated to the devil and to magic. Sadly, many nuns today, you know, these liberal nuns are basically a gathering of witches.
You know?
Fake brides of Christ. They're all in the New Age and labyrinths and...
Labyrinths.
Ecumenical.
And they need...
Magic.
Here's the connection. They need socks for the Tevas. You don't wear those things.
That's true.
You don't... That's their concern with the sock apparel of the average American.
Wool socks in the Teva. You say Teva?
Evil.
You say Teva?
I say Teva, but I mean, I don't claim to be an expert. I just call out bad fashion when I see it, you know? And that stuff is kind of coming back. In Texas, is that stuff coming back? In California, all the Tevas, the Birkenstocks, all these horrible footwear
of
the early 80s came back.
My twin daughters are all about the Birkenstock.
Yeah.
Coming back.
Yeah.
It's fashionable.
It started here. Well, it'll never be fashionable, but it's coming back. Tell your daughters.
Though. I got a pair. I'm going to go ahead and confess online here.
Oh,
I got a pair when we went to the Holy
brother.
Land because I needed some. I got rubber Birkenstocks, not leather. Because when I went to the Dead Sea, I needed a shoe that wouldn't degrade and decrode in the Dead Sea.
You needed some dead fashion for the Dead Sea?
That's right.
All right, you get yourself to a confession. Get thee to a nunnery.
Get thee to a coven conventus.
When I first saw them, my friend's wife was wearing some, and I'm a very, very dear friend, very dear wife, and I was like, I think I was just staring at him throughout a little dinner. I was like, "Did you get those from like 1981 or what?" Yeah, they're everywhere in California. But so are the Tevas. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
So Birkenstock, Tevas,
yeah,
socks, free socks, Coven brings us right back around. See how that works?
Some connection there. All right, so let's kick off with this satanic unbaptism. This is a growing popular rite in Wicca and Satanism, and they argue that baptizing infants is against religious liberty, and they never chose that someone would impose a religious rite on them. And so they have this rite in which they renounce their baptism. So satanic.
In a certain sense, they're right, though, right? I mean, this is why we baptize the young, because it is against religious liberty in the sense that, you know, one cannot make this choice for the one true faith or even false faith until they're of greater age, you know, at least 8, maybe 15, whatever. Somewhere between 8 and 15, you make that choice.
Yeah.
And that's the whole idea, isn't it? That's the essence of paedobaptism, and they're getting at the root there. They understand if you don't get them young, one of the keys, longtime keys to the faith, then I mean, these people are still gotten young, I guess, if they have to undo their baptisms. But there's something to the idea that those who oppose, those who push religious liberty, certain kinds of it, it is satanic.
Yeah, I mean, the name of this event is Libertas in Tenebris, which is freedom in the darkness.
Right.
And why are they using Latin, by the way?
It's true.
Hello, Novus Ordo World. Why do Satanists want to use Latin? Right? Because they identify it as sacred. They want to desecrate what's holy.
Right.
So they have this, you know, they had to find somebody out there who knew a little Latin to put together their tagline. Yeah, I mean, with the infants,
yeah,
it's a little different because we don't just like randomly run up to Buddhists and baptize them, or like Nacho Libre, where he's like, I'm really concerned about your salvation and stuff. And he like dunks his head in the, which is not even a right baptism. But the children, I don't ask my kids, hey, what do you want to be a marshal? When they're born, I put marshal on the birth certificate. You're in. You're with us, right? I don't ask them where they want their room to be or where they want to go to school or anything like that. I just decide all of it. It's a benevolent monarchy in my home. They're born into it. I don't say, do you want to be American or do you want to be French? No, you're American.
And if you answer French, you're out. You're out. I mean, you can't be French, but if you even want to be French, then I'm not talking to you anymore.
Right. Especially if you're a kid, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, this all goes back to ancient Israel, right? You were born into the people. And at Pentecost, when the Jews go to Peter, what must we do to be saved? They say to Peter, the first pope. He says, repent and be baptized. This promise is to you and your children.
Yeah.
Close the book. You know, there's no way a Jew in the first century would be able to hear a Christian message. Hey, when you join Christianity, just leave your kids out of it till they're 18. And then they can decide. No. Jews understand the whole family goes in. And a lot of it has to do with headship in the father. Right?
Right.
The father chooses the faith. The family comes in with them.
Well, it's a patriarchy thing.
It's a patriarchy.
The Jews are, it's a Judaic thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a Christian thing to acknowledge the benevolence of patriarchy. And so, again, these concepts like liberty of blank, liberty of conscience, liberty of religion, all this stuff that we so, you know, blindly and blithely accept as Americans, because it's the bad part of being an American. I mean, there are some downsides. Pope Leo XIII loved us, but he called it Americanism.
Yeah.
We even, you know, just as conservatives, even political conservatives, half the time you find yourself nodding your head where it's like, well, religious liberty in all senses except one is this perverted concept. And that's what all of the bad concepts of Americanism are, Taylor, is they're anti-patriarchal, and they descend from there. But yeah, they're against the nature of our roots. You know, we have the roots originally in Judaism.
Yeah, and Satanism in itself is anti-patriarchal. Who's the ultimate pater? Well, we prayed in Latin at the beginning of the show, our Father, who art in heaven. The first mind to ever reject that reality of the benevolent father was Satan.
Right.
You know, I want to read something about unbaptism ritual, because this is new to some people. This is from, I'm taking this from a website from the Satanic Temple in Seattle, which I'm sure is an interesting place. It says, our unbaptism ritual performed at our Nine Circles of Hell benefit show on August 12, 2017, was meant to help participants shed their unwanted religious past and walk free under their own power. The ritual represented breaking the chains of a faith participants no longer wish to belong to. We symbolically cut their bonds and mark them with the sign of free will. Many participants told us it was a highly moving experience for them. We were honored to help them symbolically liberate those who desired a clean break from their religious past.
This is an important point, I think, that comes from the ritual, anti-ritual, that seems to permeate every aspect of Satanism. As long as I've had a look at Satanism, I've always thought this is interesting intellectually. It's the connection, the very tenuous connection between Satanism. It's mentioned in a couple of the articles about this Coven group and their socks. The their connection between belief and unbelief, right? I mean, without saying the obvious, it's unbelief in Christianity, and it's the inversion of all the rites and all of the sacraments and all of the ecclesiology. it's also a really weird mixture of atheism and a form of backwards theism. And I think in that is where they actually get people. Because, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, I mean, let's just say that. It's completely ridiculous. But what you have is you're playing on an agnostic popular culture that you know, kind of laughs at ritual. So it's kind of half in, half out. They're laughing at ritual and they're doing reverse rituals, which actually have some provenance. They're actually kind of old, which is what we're going to talk about mm-hmm. today. And so I think what happens, long and the short of it, is you rope a lot of agnostic secularist types in with anti-ritual that ends up being secretly, they would say ironically, but actually ritualistic. I think that's the interesting balance there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, human beings are Homo sapiens, right? Wise, thinking humans, but we're also Homo liturgicus. We like liturgy. You know, you go to, whether it's a stupid frat or it's your alma mater at college or your favorite football team or the Freemasons or whatever, humans are liturgical.
Right? Yeah.
We like repetitions. We like liturgy. We like symbolism. We like allegory, analogy, signs, seals, all these things. Now, of course, that's because we're made in the image of God, and God has an economy that's set up, an economy of salvation, of redemption, that's set up that way. And so anything that's good is always going to be perverted. And, you know, one really interesting thing about this is, you know, I grew up in Texas as a Protestant. Protestants, for the most part, unless you come from like an Anglican or Lutheran background, say baptism doesn't really matter. It's just a symbol of your own personal belief, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No big deal. And they also say the Eucharist is symbolic, and they do it once a year. Where the Satanists are having a quote-unquote mass, and they are trying to unbind their baptisms. So Satanism is explicitly quasi-sacramental. They're not saying, hey, let's get together and have a black praise and worship service.
Right.
I mean, I guess maybe the burlesque part is that. But they are mocking and they're not doing even the divine liturgy, as far as I know. They're saying this is, and I love the divine liturgy, by the way, it's not a knock. This is a mass. We are mocking Roman Catholicism, and we are going to make sure that the sacrament that has the most power of binding the devil and casting out the devil in a person's life, which is baptism, we want to vocally and publicly, in a rite, receive an unbaptism. And they receive, interesting in that thing I just read, they receive a sign on their own head.
Replacement. That's weird.
It's a replacement. Yeah. Now, folks, you can't get unbaptized. There's one baptism. It puts an indelible character on your soul. You can never get unbaptized. If these people who did this satanic unbaptism came back to the church, they wouldn't get baptized again. Satan doesn't have the power to unbaptize anyone. But they are opening themselves up to the devil. And by renouncing the graces of their baptism, the character is still there, but the graces, actual and habitual, are gone.
That's right.
I looked at one of these images. It's these obscene-looking women, by the way, doing these rites. It's another blasphemous thing. You know, instead of having priests and deacons, they have women dressed in the most disgusting, provocative way, marking these people on the head. It's disgusting.
Yeah, I want to. What you were saying before about the you know, you grew up as a Protestant in Texas in the South, and you didn't have an unwavering belief in the efficacy of baptism, the real efficacy of baptism.
Right.
I just want to point out, because again, not to beat a drum, but I think people really need to see this connection. It's genuinely thoroughgoing in even American life, especially American life, is this combo of sort of 16th and 17th century modernisms, right? The Reformation and the Enlightenment, that both really took off. Their point of departure was skepticism, right? And mm-hmm. a kind of cynicism as well. They're distinguishable moments, cynicism, skepticism. But you get more of the cynicism, ironically, in the sort of early Reformation, and you get more of the skepticism as the Enlightenment develops. Arguably, you know, the Reformation was just the early kind of the proto-Enlightenment, where it wasn't really ready to put aside all the religious devotion of the old continent, you know.
Right.
But I mean, that you really see this. This is kind of the phenomenon I'm talking about with your average, say, millennial that's out there, wasn't raised with religion. They've been trained, whether it's through a kind of almost quite quasi-puritanical mockery of the sacraments, which is a puritanical thing. Yeah. They mock the sacrament. What, they're Christian? How does this work? It's weird, because mm-hmm. they're half Protestant by DNA, and that's never left us, just in our Americanist DNA. And then there's more the scorn and the actual roasting of the sacraments. That's more Enlightenment skeptical, you know, oh, well, this isn't even real, so let's roast it. Whereas I think the Puritans at least had a kind of acknowledgement that they try to split the middle and say, you know, a baptism or a confirmation, the Eucharist, is half efficacious. So it results in this really weird thing, this really weird phenomenon where, you know, millennials grow up, and if they're hanging out too much in the city, they're trying to be hip, they're hanging out with the secular crowd. And I'm not saying this is common, because it's not. Most people are smart enough, shrewd enough not to hang out with the coven or whatever. But for those people that are there, it's a strange combination of the kinds of skepticism, cynicism you got with Reformation and Enlightenment. It's just the danger is always there in the American blood.
Yeah, it's a good point, because of our Protestant, the Puritan Protestant past.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Sacraments are suspect going in.
And, yeah, and mocked in yeah, some cases.
It's mocked. So the Black Mass. I wonder, these people who are seeking out the quote-unquote unbaptism at the Satanic Temple in Seattle... and in Canada here, I'm curious as to what their religious background is. Are they primarily Catholics? Are they Baptists? They're obviously from a Christian tradition, because they're getting unbaptized.
It's true. Probably a mix.
Probably, but... Ottawa, I'm thinking Catholics and Anglicans. So it's likely true. People who grew up thinking, or at least taught, baptism is sacramental and salvific, that it communicates a habit of grace. Seattle, I'm not sure. I know there's been a lot of satanic activity in Oklahoma. I'm assuming those people are probably mostly Southern Baptist. But
right.
Regardless, it seems to be growing and taking on more adherence. And I don't know if it's because of music in the rise of black death metal, you know, and things like, you know, that I saw when I was coming up as a young man, like Marilyn Manson and those kind of things. But you kind of mentioned it earlier, Tim, there's a lack of satisfaction in just being an atheist. This is more fun.
Sure.
To go to a black mass and have the shows and the microphones and the unbaptisms and all this. They want to go to church.
That's right. It's their man is homo liturgicus. That this is what you were talking about earlier, where it's like, I had a friend in high school that described himself as atheist, and every Christmas I'd be like, what are you doing, bro? Like, I'm not getting you a present. I hope your family doesn't either. Like, but you want to be part of the fun, you know? It's natural. You don't want to be left out. You want some ritual yourself. And of course, they tie it to the sexy. And I mean, it's really old. It's like the oldest profession, right? This is the oldest kind of mockery. The oldest profession is mocking the kind of highest marital act. The oldest, you know, the oldest mockery out there is mocking what's highest, which is Roman Catholic liturgy.
Yeah.
And it is surprisingly old. I mean, having a look at the pedigree of this, it's like, wow, yeah, these people are not original. This is nothing new.
Right. You know, everyone talks about appropriating culture. Like, you can't do that. That's what the Hispanics do or the Asians, whatever. This is straight up appropriation, man. It's the
right.
two most
right.
important sacraments of
right.
of the Christian faith.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Baptism and the Eucharist.
No one cares if we get appropriated from, though. It's not a... We've seen it before. Christian culture, the West,
yeah.
European culture. That's fair game. Anyone can take right. that and mock that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I put a picture on the screen that you could... This is an unbaptism ceremony, and you can see an inverted cross, so they're definitely mocking the cross. And then there's some females, and they're holding up an apple, which obviously is hearkening back to the fall of Adam and Eve. Everybody's
Cute.
Got their black robes on and their black eye makeup and everything you would expect. You know, it's dumb.
Laugh it's while you can, evil. You know?
Laugh while you can, because there's hell. I mean, dare we hope these people are just, through their religious expressions, drawing near to Jesus? No, this is dumb.
Look,
dare we hope?
That's true. Dare we hope? But with these people, you know, looking at these people, I have it up on my phone here. This has got to be based for most of them, or a significant portion of these kids, or whatever the hell they are, you know, 25. It's got to be ignorance for I'm hoping a lot of them.
You think?
I mean,
You think it's ignorance? They're like.
The ones that are really into it, you know, that know the whole history, which is not, you know how it is in college. Everyone's just trying to, all these kids are scumbags just trying to hook up, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like any instrumentality, therefore, gets sort of back justified. And I'd guess that's what it is with a lot. I mean, look at the outfits and all that of the so-called priestesses or whatnot. So you just hope that they get wise, that this is serious. This is serious as a heart attack. There's nothing funny about it, you know, and there's a whole history there.
I mean, I'd love to talk to someone like Father Chad Ripperger or someone who does real exorcisms, you know, full-on
right.
exorcisms. I mean, what does this do to your soul? This is like lying down in the mud and rolling around in it. Like, it is a purposeful deconsecration. If you're saying, I want an unbaptism and I want to do a black mass.
Right.
And a burlesque show
right.
and bring some socks to charity, as it says in the flyer. So
it's just
dumb.
Offensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's offensively dumb.
If you do all that, what is the state of your soul? I mean, you got to be possessed.
Yeah.
I mean, you are invoking Satan. If someone like Annalise, right, has an infestation or possession of the devil, these people right here, I mean, it's just not like, oh, you know, I committed some mortal sin and the devil got in. These people are opening the front door, rolling out the red carpet, putting hors d'oeuvres on the counter and saying, all demons welcome, come in and play.
I know.
It's bad, man.
It's so bad. I mean, you're making me think of even just the nature of unbelief. Again, it's hard for me to really think that any of these kids are, you know, more than 80% of these, no less than 75-80% of the kids engaged in this stuff. It's just, it's the ennui of modern life, unbelief. Kind of you get this. I won't say kind of. It seeps through even in shows like South Park, which scour lots of sources that need to be scoured. But it's Christianity, and there's a lot of times sometimes. And there's a derision there that's like, you're mixing in the truth with all these other great sources for scorn, you know, that like Parker and Stone, when they make a South Park episode, it's like, dude, just keep this out of it, man. I know.
Yeah, but those guys are very anti-Christian. Very.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But their anti-Christianity is based on an ignorance that I'd love to.
I don't know, man. The older I get, the more I realize people know. Like, you hear these people say, well, I never knew contraception was a sin. And it's like, really? You were Catholic, and you knew about big families and Irish twins and every sperm is sacred mockery, you know, from Monty Python and all this stuff. And you never knew that that was on our books. Whereas I meet, you know, we were on an airplane, and this guy is talking to my wife. He's like, are all these kids yours? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, are you Mormon or Catholic? Catholic. This guy knows.
Well, sure, but that's not the same thing as understanding, you know, the modes of credibility by which, you know, because I mean, Mormons, that almost makes the point I'm making. It's that Mormon or Catholic, that's very superficial, right? Like, Mormons don't fully understand the natural law or the supernatural law, to say the least. And yet it's a kind of what do we call it? Divergent evolution is a principle where, you know, the biologists, whatever you think of evolution, two species look alike, Catholicism, Mormonism, but they're not actually, according to the theory, you know, the product of the same processes. So take that or leave that. But the point is, I can't help that kind of divergent evolution between people, say, Catholic or Mormon. They say it to me too here out in California. Obviously, it's a thing. It's a cliche. It shows a kind of superficiality of understanding that constitutes ignorance. I mean, I'm not saying there aren't real Satanists that understand what they're doing. I'm saying Fulton Sheen's thing, you know, the good archbishop, when he said there aren't more than 100 people. And again, I think 100 might be a little low.
The older I get, the more I think that Fulton Sheen quote is exaggerated. Because, look,
it is exaggerated.
These people,
there are people,
are saying they know enough theology to know, I'm baptized, that consecrates me to the Lord Jesus Christ. I hate that. I need to get that off of me.
Sure.
That's just not like a kid listening to Marilyn Manson albums and being like, this is really cool. I'd like to go to a party where they talk about Hail Satan and other ridiculous, blasphemous things, you know?
Yeah, no, look, I'm not seeking to exculpate. I'm just saying, as someone that's watched a lot of South Park in my day and cheered for a lot of their objects of scorn, I mean, they go after mostly the right people. And then Christians are peppered in there every once in a while that makes me think, with guys like Trey Parker, Matt Stone, it is ignorance. And I mean, it's obviously a mixture. I agree with you that the Fulton. So I was looking at this quote the other day thinking hundreds
of people are
too small.
I've never seen a South Park my whole life, not one episode. But I know who the writers are of it because I looked into them. Those are smart dudes. You're telling me they don't really understand when they mock Jesus Christ. They don't really understand that.
They understand it's a religion. I don't think they understand that he's the true, the divine son of God. I don't.
They understand that we say that.
Sure.
Yeah.
They also understand what Muslims say, and they mock that. I mean, they're one of the only groups out there. Look, I mean, we're going to be, you know, hearing in the comm box, whatever. I'm just saying, they're one of the only groups out there that is, at the very least, neutral with respect to religion. Now, I'm not saying neutrality is good, people, because it's not. There's one true faith. It's Roman Catholicism. Blah blah blah. That I'm making that clear here. But in the name of neutrality, what happens under Americanism? It didn't originally happen, but it's begun to happen where you get things like the Coven. I guess it's Canada, wannabe American, right? It's the Coven because it starts out with religious neutrality, the way all this stuff happened yes. under the WASPs in the America in the 1940s in America, where it was a very conservative time. If you buy the kind of way we never were argument, put forth by guys like Christopher Lash and all that. So it was, there is something to it. The simple fact that there are a lot of pretty smart young guys out there that grew up mocking stuff. And people hear me kind of, I guess, a little bit going to bat for guys like this, because this is how I felt when you look around and you see especially certain low forms of expressions of American Protestantism. And it's so silly, you know, honestly, not the telos of the religion. They still get that right. Christ on the cross, redemption. This is anything but silly. This is what they get right. But some of the expressions of it, particularly in the American South, which, by the way, is my favorite part of the country, the nobility of the American South, but really going to college there, it's just, I can't help but think that if some of these smarter young people, if they learned more, I mean, there's more to cleverness than derision, right? But certain kinds of American young people, and I know there are even some people in my family and my in-laws like this, clever, pretty talented young people that just never saw true expression of Christianity. And I'm not going to say true expressions of it, because, or true expression of religiosity. There's only one. And even in Roman Catholicism, what we talk about practically every other show is the silly postmodern expressions of it. That makes a certain temperament begin to mock, and it can lead them to really dark paths. I mean, as someone that has this kind of mockery impulse, I mean, I thank God, you know, I pray my rosary in Thanksgiving that I was never led, you know, except a modicum of distance away from the church in my 20s. But, you know, if you have that mocking gene, it can be really dangerous. And I think it's there. It's present. You can't deny it's present in this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not defending.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a full out mockery. It's a full out mockery. One of the things that's interesting about these satanic masses and satanic shrines and churches is it's forcing Catholics to rethink the whole idea of religious liberty. Right?
Yes.
And ecumenism. Because they've been, it's all fun and games when you're talking about Jews and Muslims. I mean, it's not, but that's how the modernist Catholic thinks. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like when you saw Bishop Barron and Ben Shapiro, and Ben Shapiro's like, am I going to be saved? And Bishop Barron says, oh yeah, you know, Vatican II, and you know, follow your conscience and all that. Okay, let's take Ben Shapiro out of that seat and put in Sheila the Satanist. Right? Why wouldn't all the arguments that applied to Ben Shapiro also apply to her? Follow your conscience, follow your religious tradition, right? You can't be, no one can impose on you or coerce you to follow Christianity. You can't be proselytized. That's the new language, right?
Yep.
You're following a spirituality. You're collecting socks for the homeless.
Right.
You have a religious patrimony. Why wouldn't we just say, well, they're saved also? And also when it comes to politics, religious liberty, well, yeah, if we're going to allow Muslims to build mosques in Rome and even sell them land owned by the church, this kind of nonsense happens, why not to the Satanists? Like, why does I talk to people here in the South who are basically on board with sort of the modernist religious liberty argument, the Freemasonic argument. But then they're so mad that Satanists want to build a shrine in Oklahoma. We've got to stop this. My question is, if you really believe in religious liberty, as you see on Bishop Barron, then you should say, well, yeah, I mean, the Satanists, they should have their shrine next to the the Bible shrine. We should have the Ten Commandment shrine, and right next to it should be the Bahamut. Is that it?
I don't know.
Fortunately, I don't know how to say these names, but you know the
Bahamut.
The Satan shrine. I mean, that's real religious liberty.
That is, and
we're gonna walk in a parade together. You know, we've got the bishop, the metropolitan bishop of the Greek Orthodox. We got the Coptic bishop. We got the Catholic cardinal. We got an imam. We got some big shot rabbis. And you can't say at this point, if you believe in religious liberty, that the satanic priestess in her black leather outfit or black hood can't also walk and hold hands with you as well. And it's showing how this religious liberty argument is just ridiculous. We have to draw lines.
Oh, doubtless. It's perhaps the greatest danger of the Fulton Sheen circle, 360 degrees of truth, where he says, you know, we're the only religion that has 360 degrees of truth. Fulton Sheen had this thing where he was trying rigorously throughout the, you know, 60s to defend the documents of the council. The documents themselves need no defense. There's nothing wrong in there. But it's like, I feel like maybe...
I quibble on that a little bit the more I study.
Whatever the case, we'll do a Vatican II show or something. Ironically, it's like the one topic we've never done. We're touching on it almost every day.
Yeah, we should do it. We should do a V2 show.
Yeah, I'll have to study up and we'll have to talk first because it's so touchy. And even what I'm saying is touchy, but when it comes to the new at least spin on ecumenism, you know, depending on where your point of view is on whether they got it right or wrong, he talks about, in a reasonable way, thinking of the wrong religions, the false religions, which is everything except Roman Catholicism, as a distinction of degree, right? Where some are closer to having 360 degrees of truth. Only Roman Catholicism does have 360 degrees of truth. This is a really tricky question. I've struggled with it lots because on the one hand, that sounds eminently reasonable. But on the other hand, it would put into the hands of the kind of robust Vatican II advocate a kind of response to what you're saying about, well, If Eastern Orthodox, why not, you know, Satanists? Because their response would be, well, there has to be, even with distinctions of degree, there has to be a kind of distinction of kind somewhere in the sand. If it's less than 100 of the 360 degrees of truth, then we cut it off or something. But the response would be like, well, yeah, but distinctions of degree don't yield distinctions of kind. That's your point.
Yeah.
So I'm going through objection, reply to the objection. I'm just saying it's an interesting issue. It's not, I never claim total certainty on issues where I'm going back and forth wrestling day to day. And it's like, sometimes I feel like the good Archbishop Fulton Sheen was yielding too much. In other moods, I'm like, no, I mean, that's true. And some days I think when I'm saying that he's yielding too much, it sounds too much like Bishop Barron with Shapiro, where it's like, you're not telling him the truth. Your emphasis is not correct here. You need to get in the faith, right? The distinction of kind. But then other times it's like, okay, well, you know, any of the forms of Christianity, particularly the liturgically sound forms like, you know, Eastern Orthodoxy, but even Protestantism are Christianity. There's a valid Christian baptism. Okay, there's a distinction of kind there, but it is a full-on distinction of degree if you say, okay, well, how much closer to conversion is any monotheist than any polytheist? And it's undeniable that they're somewhat closer. So I guess you have to, if you're going to do the Fulton Sheen thing and not go full modernist, you have to say, well, it is a distinction of degree, but until one comes into the faith, 359 degrees of truth is, in a different way of thinking about it, is just as bad as one degree. There's the anagogical and the analogical. Right. It's tough.
I mean, my response would be, and I think this is more traditional and more Thomist, it's not the 360-degree dial. Rather, it is understanding it in degrees of schism and then heresy. So, like, Thomas Aquinas would refer to the Greek schismatics. And he's granting to them they have a valid baptism, they have a valid chrismation, a valid Eucharist, valid priesthood, and all that. The problem with them is not, there's a little bit of content in there, maybe 355 degrees, but the problem is there's a lack of bond of charity, and that is the sin of schism, which is objectively a mortal sin, right? So for Thomas, that's where he's looking at it from like an ecclesiological point of view, right? So that's one, whereas if he looked at something like witchcraft or Satanism, right, that's a completely different category and species of quote-unquote religious expression.
Right.
And he would, I have no doubt, sure, Thomas Aquinas would say that those people should be killed. The leaders and promoters of it. I mean, people don't like to hear that, but that's the old school Dominican take on these type of
spreading
witches.
Error. Yeah. That's for sure.
Right. So, you know, we should maybe talk a little bit about, we promised folks the history of the Black Mass and the mockery of the Mass. And the earliest reference is Epiphanius. And he said that there was a Gnostic sect called the Borborites, and they had a mockery of the Eucharist in which they would smear their hands with menstrual blood and semen and eat them as the blood and body of Jesus. It's disgusting. This was going on in the 300s.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the Constantinian era of these heretics. You know, this is when basilicas are being built in Rome and in Jerusalem and Constantinople, and ecumenical councils are happening. You have this Gnostic group. It's foul. And what's amazing is Aleister Crowley brings it back. He brings back human semen and menstruation into his quote-unquote Eucharistic rites. Is foul.
Gross. Yeah, it makes us, I guess I'm taking the opposite angle on what I said before. It is, we do talk, don't we, as if, you know, the mock-up or the you know, farce, human mockery done in a sort of artistic form, not even artistic, just, you know, spoofing, was some sort of invention of the Enlightenment. And you go back and you read some of the comics and the poets of the Greeks and the Romans, and it's like, oh yeah, this is naive that I ever thought that, like, humor was an Enlightenment invention, or in this case, blasphemous humor. It's as old as Christianity, I'm sure. It runs with human nature. You're going to have these skeptics that do disgusting things with body fluids in mockery of Christianity. Why does it always go to that, do you think?
Well, think about it. So this is the signs of natural life,
right? Yeah.
Pagan man knows in his mind that these bodily fluids relate to the procreation of children. I mean, there's something magical about the procreative act.
Right.
And they're obsessed with sex. Right.
Right. Yeah. So, and are completely obsessed with pirates.
All, gold, as we're about to gold, see,
that's what it,
Black Masses are always, I mean, traditionally a Black Mass, and there's lots of pictures and woodcuts from the Middle Ages and Reformation era and Renaissance and France and all that. I decided not to put them on the screen because they have naked, you know, drawings of naked women, but a Black Mass traditionally is celebrated on the body of a naked woman. And the priest
dead
will
body?
Wear a vestment, but he'll be naked also, right? So he has like a chasuble on, but no cassock, no alb, no amis. And then those attending will also be in the nude. So this is kind of that's the liturgical setup for a Black Mass. So the altar is a naked woman.
A live naked woman, or
a naked woman.
She's got to hold really still. Yeah, I'd imagine.
I know.
I mean, because you got a whole setup there. You got a whole tablecloth. It's a party trick. Yeah. Remember. I mean, everyone remembers it. But if you've seen Eyes Wide Shut and the,
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's all about this stuff. You know, they're all kinds. You know, 20 minutes of the movie removed. Kubrick died. Some say was killed 6 days before the movie was released.
Is it a Kubrick film?
It's a Kubrick film.
Okay.
And the people say it's a tell-all for the pedo Satanism in Hollywood. And it's
really,
it's fascinating. I mean, there's a lot of nudity. You got to watch out. And I, you know, you got to a lot, but they go to this satanic pedo or sex magic. I can't remember how much pedo, but sex magic, it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Sex magic masquerade ball, Tom Cruise. And no one, he's the only one without a mask. And he's just trying to figure it out afterwards. It's an elite party said to be, you know, there's the famous issue from Eyes Wide Shut of the Bob Hope mask, you know, one of them. And it says that Kubrick is telling all at the end of his life.
What's a Bob Bob Hope mask?
Yeah, one of the main sex magic priests, the lead satanic guys, has a mask in the background at the party that looks like Bob Hope. People say that means something. There's all kinds of meaning, all kinds of Kubrickian imagery. I'm thinking of a couple different shots, but it's likely a tell-all, or at least possibly a tell-all. And yeah, the point is there's always that sexual connection in this stuff. Now, what reminded me of this is the fact that with the Jeffrey Epstein stuff, you know, when the footage was released of the girl leaving his apartment, you know, he's likely involved in this. We have the temple with the outside locking door that was said to be found on his island. But so the girl was leaving, and this was released a couple days ago. They played the music from Eyes Wide Shut, the ritual music. I think it's backwards chant. It's creepy stuff.
Bad.
It's sort of fascinating stuff. And it's you listening to, you know, aggressive rock music growing up, you know, you'd hear this stuff. You know, I was in Texas, and you'd hear kind of school marms saying, watch out, you're going to become satanic if you listen to, you know, heavy
rock.
I tell
my kids, don't listen to any of that music, man. Bad news.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you don't know what to make of it if you're a young me, and it's like, but this stuff, that stuff is all around. I guess this is why people hear me with younger people just not believing, and the danger is through disbelief. The danger is through disbelief because not that I was ever into any of this stuff, because I wasn't. I just thought it was funny. And I thought that people would only do this. It's so stupid to mock Christianity. I thought they would only do it as a kind of, you know, expression of ennui.
Right.
But it's real. And it's really all around. The more elite you go toward the pinnacle of the pyramid in society, the more prevalent it is.
Right.
And that's I've learned. You keep saying as I get older. As I get older, I'm like, wow, this is real in the higher reaches of society.
I mean, this is one of the things that I cover in my book, Infiltration.
Yeah.
And I'll just read it. So this is page 200. The infamous occultist Aleister Crowley and his adherents also possess a ritualistic connection to St. Gallen, Switzerland. Crowley was a pioneer in recreational drug experimentation, a bisexual and esoteric occultist, a poet, painter, and outdoorsman. He was derided as the wickedest man on earth and labeled a Satanist, but he was not formally a Satanist, but a self-proclaimed prophet and founder of the religion of Thelema. As an enthusiastic mountaineer, Crowley spent much of his time in Switzerland, and his religion centered on sex magic of the Order of the Templars of the Orient, OTO. Of which Crowley was a member. Originally, OTO was European Freemasonry, but under the leadership of Crowley, OTO was reorganized around the Law of Thelema, do what thou wilt shall be the whole law. And you see this on the satanic stuff, do what thou wilt.
Yep.
Whereas the Blessed Mother says, do whatever he tells you. Different viewpoint.
Right.
Unlike explicit Freemasonry, the OTO includes an ecclesiastical and liturgical church, the Ecclesia Gnostica Catholica, the Gnostic Catholic Church. The purpose of this church is to restore Christianity to its original status as a, get this, solar phallic religion. The OTO is a phallic cult in its oldest lodges in Switzerland. The OTO also celebrates the rite of the Gnostic Mass, which Crowley wrote in Moscow in 1913. The liturgy calls for five officers, a priest, a priestess, a deacon, two acolytes called children, and culminates in the consummation of a faux Eucharistic rite and the consumption of wine and cake of light made of menstrual fluid, after which the recipient recites, there is no part of me that is not the gods. It seems that the Diocese of St. Gallen originally assisted the OTO in celebrating this false mass, and I go on explained by giving them unconsecrated hosts.
In what year?
What's that?
What year was that? When did they... What decade or what century even was... How far back does the St. Gallen connection go?
So the Gnostic Mass is different than the Satanic Black Mass, but similar. Crowley wrote this in 1913. In Russia.
And he was... Yeah.
And he's connected with the communists. And then the Swiss-born Hermann Joseph Metzger, he becomes the patriarch of the Gnostic Church in 1960. And by this point, they've set up shop in Appenzell, which is connected to St. Gallen, Switzerland. And of course, this raises all kinds of questions about Theodore McCarrick, who received his vocation there and spent many, many summers and even some years, or at least 1 year, studying there. So this connection right. with sex magic and then abuses or mockeries of the mass are hand in hand.
Yeah.
It's not a conspiracy, people. It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's a fact that Aleister Crowley wrote this right. It's a fact that they celebrate it all the time, even to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny that this word conspiracy has been so maligned. In some ways, we never went to the moon people really ruined it for all of us. The potheads at community college
right.
saying we never went to the people. Moon. Flat Earth, this stuff. Because that is conspiracy theory. But, you know, what's a fact? I mean, a conspiracy is just two or more get together with the intent to commit any other serious crime.
Right.
So conspiracy is a fact. You know, anytime you have two or three guys robbing a bank, that's a conspiracy to do a robbery. And of course, in American law, well, we have something called merger doctrine, where the conspiracy merges with the robbery. But people are so brainwashed on this, they hear anything that does involve a conspiracy, fictional or non-fictional, and they just say conspiracy theory. No, conspiracy theory is an unpremised, you know, largely intuited. Sure, it's built on circumstantial evidence, but so is, you know, good thinking often hangs on circumstantial evidence. And people fail to mark the difference. I mean, Caesar, in Shakespeare anyway, Caesar was killed by a conspiracy of Brutus and Cassius. It really happened.
I mean, Judas Iscariot conspired with the priest to crucify our Lord.
Right, right. So, yeah.
And here's another Latin word of the week. Conspiracy comes from spirare, which means to breathe, and con, together. So these are people who are breathing together. Like there's this idea that they're living together. Even the breathing maybe is whispering, you know, like,
yeah,
hey, let's get this done, you know?
Yeah. So, get her done.
Get her
you
done.
You whisper. Usually you yell, get her done. But,
yeah,
but
right.
in this case, the conspiratorial people are whispering. Yeah.
I'm going to put up on the screen a picture of an altar from a Gnostic mass. Tim, you can't see it, but here's some notable things about it. It looks like a Catholic altar. It's ad orientem. It has a tabernacle. It has six candles on it, just like at a High Latin Mass. There's even a cross there. But people, this altar comes from a Gnostic Catholic church. It's a Gnostic mass. It is perverted.
Yeah.
And what we see, what's so interesting about this sex magic that Aleister Crowley promoted is it's wrapped up in Catholic garb. It is vested in Catholicism. And, you know, my concern is that same idea of mixing Catholicism and sex magic is what has come into the Catholic priesthood in the past 50 years. I was talking to a guy who said he once knew a priest who was later charged and convicted for child abuse. He once went into this priest's rectory and he had all these statues from Africa with these phallic, you know, expressions. And he looked around this, he's like, how can this guy be a priest? He has all these phallic statues. Well, 20 years later, the guy understood why, you know? So this idea that somehow sex magic and perversion and the celebration of the occult could be brought in and shrouded, you know, I think some people see, okay, Black Mass, that's obviously anti-Catholic, unbaptism, right, all that. But then there's another shade, another level, and that's what Aleister Crowley was doing in the Gnostic Catholic Church, and that is, let's actually cloak it with Catholic altars and words and all that. So it's dangerous.
It's like a new level.
It's a new level. And then the next level is actually inside the Catholic Church.
Right. I mean, there's so much evidence for this. You're saying, I mean, your book goes through a lot of it, but it's like, oh, I'm beginning to suspect. I think you said it's like, so I'm beyond beginning to suspect. I think you are too. There's much evidence for the sex magic stuff, and the problem is I listen to myself say this stuff, and it's just, it's really easy and cheap, and it's low-hanging fruit for establishment types, you know, some of these, I'm not going to name names, but who kind of pay attention to this show, pay attention to you and me on Twitter, and say, what, doing another show, Marshall and Gordon, on pedo sex magic? Come on, you watched a little too much Eyes Wide Shut. But it's like, I mean, this is the kind of stuff I was saying, even as a fully reverted faithful Catholic 5-4 years ago. I mean, but you know, we learned a lot with Cardinal McCarrick, which is kind of where this show started. Point of arrival anyway was the McCarrick Summer of Shame, and it's like, wow, I mean, my eyes are now wide open. And yeah, I mean, that's fine. You can always make fun and just say, you believe what? I mean, speaking of when they discovered the earth was round, like, the earth is a ball and no one rolls off the edge. You know, I mean, you can always sit back and do that, but
right.
Unlike the tinfoil hat, pothead conspiracy theory people, there's something called evidence. And I'm very interested in evidentiary proceedings and evidentiary processes. And there's a lot of it. So, I mean, you know, think about James Grine. Think about stuff that's even hit the news in the last 2 weeks. Think about this. Think of how widespread it is. The American political discourse is now beset and in some sense characterized by, insofar as President Trump is loathed by the far left, some of the most vocal advocates are these witches, Wiccans doing spells. 2016 was I was just looking at some more of the WikiLeaks documents I hadn't seen. The Podesta saying there's going to be a Catholic Spring. I'm looking through Sochi's book on Benedict, and he's talking about the 2016 election. He's using the term infiltration, right? Yeah. He's saying, you know, there are articles written in 2016 by Italian journalists saying, look at this infiltration by Satanism of the American church, you know, and by the Democrats that maybe aren't Satanists, but are trying to use it for a kind of Luciferian political regime. It's all around us. And now it's Ottawa, you know, tomorrow it'll be New York City. It's really weird. And anybody who's an agnostic that's sitting on the fence, probably not a lot of our viewers, but young people out there that are plagued by skepticism, look around. Why is this such a big part of the discourse now? From the Catholic point of view, the anti-Catholic point of view, even ritualistically, it's become quite prominent in the political culture, which is very odd.
Yes. Yes.
If it's not true, it's odd anyway. Right.
Well, as culture becomes less Christian, less Catholic, we're going to see this satanic manifestation fill in the gaps for people. And it concerns me because our country will not just become godless, but anti-God. That's what this whole thing's about. It's Satanism is, I will not serve. Do what thou wilt, right? And St. Michael, right, the archangel, replies to Satan, Mikael, who is like God. Mikael, Hebrew, Mikael. And he gets the name Michael, Mikael. Because he responds back to Satan and says, who's like God? You can't be like God. Your black mass is dumb. These unbaptism rites don't work. You can't unbaptize yourself. You bring socks up and do a donation. This whole thing is ridiculous. Like, that's what's kind of cool about St. Michael the Archangel is he says the Lord rebuke you to Satan, but he jests and he asks the rhetorical question, who's like God? Like, seriously? You're going to put yourself up on the pedestal and say, I'm a God. That's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like in Step Brothers. When
getting deep.
The dad is telling him about, like, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a T-Rex, and I put everything I had into it, and they're like, but you can't even do that. Like, how would you even do that? Like, you can't be like God. He's totally different. He's a totally different thing, totally higher. It's very, very puerile to, you know,
it's like an ant.
Satanism is
puerile. Ant saying, I want to be a human. An ant can never, or a cockroach, I'm going to become a human. Just because you say it doesn't make it so.
Right.
And in fact, when you try to become something better than you are on your own power, you thwart and pervert your own nature.
Right.
You become a mockery of yourself.
Look at transitioning people, just to kind of grab the low-hanging fruit. These kids are destroying their bodies. They're mutilating their bodies out of all functionality, right? Yeah. They're mutilating their bodies out of any future functionality if they ever came to their senses based on trying to be something they're not. It's incredibly, incredibly destructive. The world has never seen such focused, sort of quasi-harnessed, conglomerated destruction as is happening now. I mean, everyone talks about the 20th century of the World War II and the Cold War, which we were thinking worst case scenarios, rightly. There was that we were really close to a worst case scenario a couple of those times. It was touch and go. Mm-hmm. But that was, and there was a healthy admixture of the unnatural, the supernatural with the natural there. I mean, look at Fatima in 1970. We haven't talked about Fatima in a while. I just did, you know, a week of it to open the year with all my students, week of Fatima talks. But so I'm not saying the 20th century is just natural evils. This is the beginning of it. But the 21st century seems to be an extension of the 20th century. Hopefully we have less genocide. The 20th century is the most genocidal century yet. Yeah. But it seems to be focusing in a really interesting way, think of the 2016 election, on the supernatural battles. Mm-hmm. I mean, the spiritual combat has been taken from being kind of a mixture of natural, supernatural in the 20th century to it's kind of openly all tending towards supernatural now. And what we've learned through James Grine.
Yeah, Father Heilman said he believes that we had the century from 1917 to 2017. And he believes 2017 began a supernatural war where it's now out in the public. It's not just, you know, people behind the scenes or the demons being secret or quiet. Now all these horrible things in the church are coming to light. Things in the public arena are escalating. And then lay people on the ground are saying enough is enough. I'm going to pick up the I haven't touched the rosary since 1973. I'm going to start praying the rosary every day. Right, I'm going to get serious about being a Catholic. I'm going to find the traditional norms. I'm going to pray the rosary every day. I'm going to go find a Latin mass. I'm going to, porn is evil. I'm going to get all porn out of my life. Sexual immorality. All these things. I think people are realizing you can't just be like a friendly neighborhood Catholic.
Right.
It goes, you're either going to get sucked down into the pit or you're going to ascend on high. There's no more of this middle ground where you can hide.
And it's always through sex. It's always, almost always through the sins of the flesh. You were talking about why, I think I said it, you mentioned it. Why is it always the sex stuff? Because that's how common people, even Mary said this, right? Common people through sins of the flesh, I think it was Our Lady of Good Success, they're just, this is the main route to hell.
Yeah, easy way.
Sins of the flesh. Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a guy last night and I said, I've noticed in the last few years, there's three things that radically transform a person, a family, a church, and that is pray the rosary every day. If you're not praying the rosary every day, you're not on the team. Our Lady of Fatima got off her throne in heaven, came down to earth in 1917 and said, pray five decades every day. Pray the rosary
every
day.
Please do it. Yeah.
You just have to do it. Pray the rosary every day. Go to a Latin mass. Get all porn out of your life. Those three things will change a person, a family, an entire generation. You will put a mark on the dynasty of your family if you get serious and do these three things. I've seen people radically change.
I mean,
just darkness to light. Because if you can get worship right, and you get rid of like the altar girls and the communion in the hand and the liturgical abuse and the dumb music and all this stuff, and you get your worship right, where you're really focused on it for 52 Sundays plus holy days of obligation, and then you get your loins right, and you order yourself sexually correct, you know, and then you get tapped into Our Lady with that weapon, look out, right?
And absolutely. Especially, I mean, I probably would have said the first two, talking to adults, and maybe just gut check, like, is this what I would have said? I really do agree. I would say this probably to young people, and I do. I guess I, out of naivete, forget that when you're dealing with, doesn't matter, married, Catholic, the stats are high for how many people are plagued by porn.
Yeah.
You know, this is not an issue, not an issue we talk about very often, but I'm just naive with it. I'm like, okay, you're married, you're Catholic. This is ridiculous. I don't even know why you'd have it. It's right. Stupid if you're doing stuff right in your marriage. I mean, it's right. Just ridiculous. But it's incredibly dark. It's incredibly dark. And now, it makes me think of the banality of sin. Right? It's incredibly dark. And think about the lives of these people. And this is kind of a corny do-gooder approach to it, but it's true. Think of the lives of the people that do this. What awful lives they live.
Yeah.
And you're capitalizing on it and literally like getting your jollies off. I mean, whatever it takes to rid yourself of this scourge of society that I guess, if you're sexually habitually giving in to these impurities, then you can't think straight. You can't think straight. Someone that's addicted to porn is literally your temperance and your prudence. Two of the cardinals are linked like this.
Yes.
And all of the cardinals, they're all called hinge virtues. We're not Platonists. We don't think there's a super virtue that gets them all.
Right.
I'm starting Aristotle in his critique of the Platonic wannabe super virtue. You got to get them all one at a time, like working your different muscles. Right.
Right.
But there is conceptual overlap. Hinge. Yeah. And your temperance and your prudence get totally jacked.
Yeah, obliterated.
No pun intended. Yeah. You know, when you are addicted, particularly as a man, I don't understand it as well.
I think it's the same for a woman.
For the ladies.
Same problem with the women.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
I just don't claim to know. I'm not going to. With my troubles and the things going on these days, I won't speak for the ladies, but I know it's a male problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more prominent problem with males. And you cannot think straight when you are habitually reside. If every one of your confessions, people out there, are involved sexual sin, which is very common, priests say this is the most common thing, then get serious about the other two things that Taylor mentioned, the rosary,
mm-hmm.
the Latin Mass, and seriously, try a high bar, try an Exodus 90 instead of just going for Exodus 90. Just want to, because this is what men like, right? Men like, okay, how do I get rid of the Satanism
Declare
in
war.
My own life? Declare war and go for the high bar. Like, yeah, I'm going to do Exodus give up 90.
TV, movies, hot showers, sugar, cokes, drinks,
alcohol
for 90 snacks. Days. I'm going to tell my body, sit down. You don't get to say right now. You get nothing.
Right.
Your bodily pleasure, you get nothing. Right. We're rebuilding this machine right now. Oh, be quiet. We're rebuilding this machine. Right. That's what Exodus 90 is. So Tim's done Exodus 90. I've done Exodus 90. It's awesome. Probably you need to do another one. And then the other thing, it's super practical. As I tell my kids and myself, you can't fight with sexual temptation. You can't wrestle it. You're not strong. You always run away. If you're sexually tempted, get up, go make a cup of coffee, go outside, move your physical body.
Lift weights.
Lift weights. Do something different. When Father Wolf was my spiritual director, that's what he'd always say. If sexual temptation presents itself, stand up. Even just get out of a chair. Move your body, right? You've got to just flee and go and change things. Change things physically just and move out. And then the other thing is, I'm surprised how many people don't have their stuff locked down. If you don't have covenant eyes on every computer in your house, and they're not locked down where kids can't get on them, you're wrong. You basically just bought a lifetime subscription to Penthouse magazine for your kids. If they have devices and it's not locked down. Covenant eyes is good. That locks down a phone or a computer. And then Disney Circle, I'm not thrilled with everything Disney does, but you can get a Disney Circle that'll lock down the Wi-Fi in your home. So you can lock it down at the device and you can lock it down at the hub. So I think that's just like ground zero, man. You got to lock your stuff down, especially if you have kids. God forbid your kids get exposed to these vile things in your own home, which should be a domestic church. You have basically these devices and the internet are like giant sewage holes into your home. You got to seal it off. I get so tired of locking down stuff and passwords. I'm like, God, this better give me some time off purgatory. I hate doing all. There's all these bad people out there trying to put scum into my house, and I've got to constantly try to keep things locked up.
It's true.
So, all right, we got to shut this down, don't we?
Yeah, I'm taking my kid to first day of school.
Oh, right.
Well, it's a half homeschool, half whatever group school.
Co-op.
So, yeah, co-op. We're doing first day.
Okay, so everybody, lock down your devices. Pray the most holy rosary every day. Be on the team. There it is. And get a good rosary, man. The one that you're proud of. Use a good rosary.
One of our fans made me this one. It's actually...
Oh, really?
I don't know if I ever thanked him on the air.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
I've got
one of those too.
He sent two to me. He said, "Give one to you." It's like you could take this on like the hike. I've always wanted to do the Appalachian Trail.
Me too.
One of my summers. Yeah, and so it's like
that right there. I mean, I always say I had a rosary that was kind of like that, and that's like your kid falls into a pit, and you're like, "Here, grab my rosary and pull him out."
Yeah, exactly.
It's serious.
It's literally like that. Yeah. So it's heavy. It would be a backpacking weight, but
I bought one of those rosaries a few years back. I don't carry it with me because it's so heavy. My pants are falling down. It's in my pocket. Right. You got to double up your belt, man, when you wear
suspenders,
that rosary.
Belt and suspenders, belt, as we say in the law. Yeah.
That's what my dad used to say. He said, "What do you call a guy with a belt and suspenders?" And I said, "What?" He says, "A pessimist."
Yeah, that's right.
He's worried his pants are going to fall down.
So,
yeah, everybody, please subscribe to this channel. Please hit the like button. In this moment, the most important thing you can do before we hang up is share this video. Use the share button on Twitter, Facebook. Share it. Tell people to come watch it. And then, of course, I'd appreciate it if you support on Patreon. I'll send you some signed books. That always helps out as well. And thanks for watching. Signing out. God bless.